This is Radio Free Galaxy. It's time to go.
This is the space age, and we are here to go.
3, 2, 1, 0. Through heaven and earth.
Welcome to Radio Free Galaxy. I'm Travis Lee.
I'm Teen Komar.
I'm Adam someone or other.
And this is episode 119 of this podcast that we do reviewing pop culture stuff.
Stuff. And things.
TV and shit.
Yeah.
Junk.
Tonight on the show or day, whatever fucking time it is for you, it's night for us, Monday night in particular, but whatever time it is for you, we are going to be reviewing the newest episodes of the two shows that we're currently watching, which are The House of the Dragon, and The Rings of Power. And we are also going to get into a movie review of Clerks 3, Kevin Smith's autobiography. Anyway, so we're going to be reviewing Clerks 3. I doubt many of you have seen it. Unless you've been to the Fathom event over the last weekend, or you have caught the showings that he's been traveling around, Kevin and has been traveling around and showing the movie to live crowds and stuff like that and doing a Q&A. It hasn't had a full theatrical release like a lot of his movies lately. It's a very unconventional style of releasing a movie, but sometimes that's what you have to do. In this day and age, to get it released in theaters is you have to jump through a whole bunch of fucking hoops, especially if you want to make any kind of dialogue-based independent-type movie.
Yeah, now, no explodies or anything.
No explodies, no CGI or anything like that. So, yeah, we saw it, though. We saw it over the weekend, and we're going to let you know what we think of it. Please remember to leave us a rating and review on the Spotify app, if that's how you're listening to us, or on Apple Podcasts. You can just leave us a little star review over there. You don't even have to say how much we suck. Just one star. They suck. I can smell them through my phone.
Just a little suck.
Yeah. Anyway.
Just a tip.
And please check out the Radio Free Galaxy YouTube channel. It's going strong over there. Last week I mentioned that I was about to or just had put up a video of the Misfits from 1999 live in Milwaukee. It's pretty cool. Go check it out over there. And many other commercials and concerts and cartoons, all digitized from VHS tapes. You can also watch some videos of Christine playing with toys and making awesome videos, whatever they're about.
Being, you know, killing demons with VHS tapes and all that.
Stuff like that. Guys, do you want to get right into the reviews?
Yeah, let's do it.
Guy and lady.
Guy, lady.
Do you mind when people, like, refer to you as, like, hey guys?
No, actually, I don't. I call everyone dude, so I feel like it's universal.
But some ladies get offended by that, right?
I suppose so. That's their own agenda.
To me, guys can be just like dudes, like universal kind of thing. Hey, yous.
Well, like, I call my cat dude. I call my niece dude. Like, I call everybody dude because I just feel guys, dudes, it's totally universal.
Totally guys. Hey, you guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. Right.
You're not hey, pals. We hey, chums.
I know more than anyone that you're not a guy.
Oh, do you now? Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Look at that.
Let's get into the Rings of Power. Rings of Power, episode 4. The Great Wave. So, apparently, we're getting closer and closer to the destruction of Numenor. I can't even say it.
You have to say it so eloquently. Well, Numenor.
I can't roll my R's very well, so I can't say things with like the gusto that they do in any of the Lord of the Rings content. There's always like rolling of R's and shit involved with the pronunciation, the reverent pronunciation of Lord of the Rings shit. And so I can't roll my R's, so it always comes out sounding clunky. So I can't. Numenor.
Right. So, listeners, just so you're aware, Travis's Spanglish sucks too.
Yeah.
He can't roll his R's. Yeah. Which, me being half Mexican, you'd think I could? No, not at all. No. I suck at it too. So.
Just never practice rolling my R's all that much. I just
for all that Lord of the Rings talk you got going on, it's like I need to be good at rolling my R's.
The other thing you gotta understand is for half my life I had a fucking inch and a half piece of metal in my tongue. So like go ahead and fucking roll your R's when you got a tongue piercing. I'm sure there's fucking plenty of people out there who can do it, but I already couldn't do it, so then add an inch and a half piece of metal on top of that, it's like not happening.
Mm. Yeah.
Not so. Happening.
Anyway, we're getting closer to the destruction of Numenor. I don't even like saying it because I feel so stupid saying it. And
Numenor.
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
Celebrimbor.
Dude, if you had to pass a test on any of the Lord of the Rings, you would fail.
Well, I will be able to like spell them and stuff like that, but like it gets lost in my mouth. It gets lost between my brain and coming out of my mouth.
Unquote.
Yeah, it gets lost in my mouth somewhere, and I know what I'm supposed to say, but it just comes out of Numenor. Anyway, but Numenor is about to get hit by a big fucking wave. Spoilers for the rest of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, no.
It's not going to be there for very fucking long. And the Queen Regent, she's trying to keep everything together. Her father is insane, or not insane, but he's sick
dying.
And dying. And none of the kingdom of Numenor knows about it. So she's got to try to keep that secret and keep the kingdom together and also deal with this elf that showed up on her shores and the impending evil that's everywhere, you know. So, you know, she's trying to keep it together. And then you
spoiler,
got...
the evil's Sauron.
Yeah, the
spoiler.
Evil Sauron. They could call it Arda or Adra or whatever the
Adar.
Hell. Adar. There you go. Adar.
That one's simple to say.
Yeah, it is, but I still couldn't remember it. You know, that fucker is fucking around trying to bring back, you know, evil for whatever goddamn reason, you know, because he hates trees.
Screwing around.
And, he loves orcs and he looks a little bit like a dime store Marilyn Manson. I was kind of hoping when, like, they showed him in the shadows, like, walking up, it looked kind of like a, like, wiry-haired, weird-looking Marilyn Manson type, and I was like, please, just let it be him. That'd be rad. Wasn't. It's just some knockoff.
He would rule the orcs, though,
dude,
wouldn't he?
Travis.
Rad.
What?
Fucking, I gotta say, when I was watching this shit,
mm-hmm.
and the fucking, that scout fucking elf dude was like, Sadar, why do they call you father? It's like, like, no shit, dude. I was like sitting there like, ask your mom.
Oh, that would have been great if like an orc in the background just kind of said that and fucked off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, so you got that whole storyline going on. I mean, we know what's going to happen. You know, you got the one captain's kid got kicked off the ship team.
A seal door.
That doesn't sound right coming out of my mouth either.
No, a seal door. There's a ilio at the end, and it's seal door. Yeah,
it's no.
I don't know.
Isildur. I'm too Wisconsin.
His full name, they just call him Isil. Like what? He's a fucking thing that you put your painting fucking frame on that you start canvas over.
I want Travis to do a live reading for a cassette for the Wisconsinite version of the Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, that'd be hilarious. Get like an all star cast of Wisconsinites. Get the Uke in there. Get fucking Charlie Barron's.
Oh, there's spicy raisins in there. Oh yeah.
That'd be fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
because all the names would just be as Wisconsinite as Wisconsin can be.
So Isildur got kicked off of the seat off the rowing team, and
on there he was in Caradon. With his buddy Thorin, or is it Durin? Durin. Is that like Durin. The Duracell battery story?
Yeah, so anyway, that whole Numenor story is boring. Let's get to the dwarves, which is awesome.
Yes.
The dwarven storyline right now is they're building the fucking tower forge thingy, but then they're also doing this secret mining operation and digging deep into the mountain, and we find out that it's because they're mining Mithril. They just, like, discovered Mithril. Mithril.
Mithril. You might call it Mithril. No, I believe it's Mithril.
Are you dick?
There should be a pause when I'm about to say a Lord of the Rings name, and then somebody else comes in and says it properly.
We can try it.
There'd be like a ding, and then Mithril. Anyway, they're mining for
Mithril.
You guys are terrible.
And we get more Prince Dern, which is always welcome, and his wife
Disa.
That's it. You're not going to put nuts. You're not
That Disa. She's a dwarf.
I know, but
so it's a very brunt name.
You got to say everything with earnest and gusto.
Disa.
Anyway, there's a collapse in the mine, and Durin's upset, and there's four dwarves, and they're all no. And you know, they hold a vigil for the dwarves, and she sings that beautiful song. It was really cool, dude. Any more Disa that we can get in the show? Dude. Like, I want all of her. Dude, she's great.
Because, like, she resonates with the rocks to basically find out if they should mine or not. But it's, like, also being in harmony with what surrounds them. And I'm like, dude, that is possibly one of the coolest scenes I've seen for, like, the Dwarven Kingdom, especially in mythology. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah. It was really cool.
I mean, you see a million times, you know, dwarves fighting dragons and being in battles and stuff, but actually doing something to bring their culture together before, like, everything just completely crumbles. Like, that was cool.
Yeah, it's cool to see the beauty of like dwarven culture. I'm like speaking about it like it's real or something, but I mean, to us that live in fantasy worlds for most of our lives, it kind of is, you know what I mean? Right. But it's cool to see like their actual culture than to just say, you know, we pray to like the hammer god or the rock god, you know, and like, oh, that's fucking silly, and buy my beard this, and buy my father's beard, you know.
Well, and that's also another thing is
grudge that.
Yeah. Well, not only that, it was always like mostly about the dudes in every fantasy. It's always about the dudes. Maybe you'll have like one princess or a dumbass in distress, right, or like one other woman trying to be a dude and like, oh, surprise, she's a chick. But there's never just like a bunch of women that are in like not just the foreground, but they're actually main characters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I really like that storyline. I don't know. It's cool. It's a fine episode. We're almost halfway through this season. I really wish they would kind of
focus
exactly. Show us kind of where they're going with all of this. It seems to me that they're just relying on the fact that they're probably going to have more than one season, and they're not going to give us any kind of complete story in a season, and that's kind of disappointing.
Oh, no, it's true, but you know we're going to be around there for the second season if they don't finish up in this one.
Yeah, I like it. There's a lot of little ancillary things that are going on that are seem to me a little distracting from the overall telling of the story. And the over earnestness of Galadriel, like, gets on my nerves.
It's a bit much, but then, like, I also have to say, in Numenor, the people are easily swayed no matter if they're, like, in the middle of, like, about to, like, rebel, or just someone saying, hey, don't do that. Like, yeah, that's a good idea, too.
Yeah. They took our gifts!
It's like, no, we didn't. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Bye. I'll buy wine for everybody. Okay, bye.
It's like, that's it.
That's how you break up a rabble in Numenor.
Numenor. Is
you buy everybody wine, one cup of wine, and they just go back to partying. So anyway, anyone got anything to add to Rings of Power? There was some shit with the Harfoots, and there was some shit with Arendir, but, like, whatever.
No, I mean, not that much about the Harfoots in this episode. I know they're on their migration plan, and I really don't particularly like the other elf human love story going on, so
it's just I like the character Arendir, and I like the action scenes they've done with him and everything like that. Just like the storyline between him and Bronwyn is just really boring.
Yes.
It's really boring. The kid Theo, it's just, he's fucking around with the hilt of the sword, like, eh.
I don't know, I just didn't find it that interesting. Eh. I just, like, wish they would focus more on the dwarves and Galadriel's story, just to kind of, you know, not have a bajillion things to tie up, you know, and finish in the end.
Yeah. Anyway, that's that. And House of the Dragon. So, House of the Dragon, episode 4 this week. Boy, would we...
Ooh, chugga.
Okay, so episode 4 of the House of the Dragon is titled King of the Narrow Sea, and this is the episode where House of the Dragon starts doing some Game of Thrones type shit.
Yeah, I was going to say King
of the Targaryens being Targaryens, right?
I was going to say King of the Narrow Sea, that's what she said.
We got, I think, our first dong of the series.
Yes, full on dong.
In a pleasure house, we saw a flaccid dong.
check.
We had some incestual sex.
Check.
Between Targaryens.
Check.
What else? We had a Hand of the King being fired.
Check.
Well,
there was, let's see, Princess lying. Now she has to get married to someone she doesn't want. Check.
Right.
What else is there? Oh, the prince gets kicked out again. Check.
Yeah. So, Adam, this whole episode for me, I hate saying this word, but it was real cringy, dude.
Yeah, well, you know. You're good at that.
The show is good at that, but at what cost to the story, to the overall story? Like, is it that necessary? We know that the Targaryens have a history of inbreeding and things like, and weirdness like that, because they think they're better than everybody else. So at times they feel like the only people that can be their equals are themselves. So
I don't think it's quite that.
What is it?
It's to remain politically isolated yet still strong. Because why would you want to mix your bloodline and weaken your own claim to the Iron Throne?
Well, what are Matt Smith's intentions? Not Matt Smith, but I mean, what are Daemon's intentions?
It doesn't matter what his intentions are. He's not the heir. He's not the declared heir. So he lives in this weird, like, area where what he does matters, but it doesn't. Like, he can sully his reputation until he's blue in the face, and the only effect that it really has is it sullies the Targaryen name. The fact that they're just going to marry fucking what's her, they tried to marry what's her fuck off to the other Valyrian fucking house. I mean, the reason not to do it and the reason for them to basically be incestuous is to maintain internal house strength and prevent other houses from gaining power.
But here's the thing. All of this could be prevented by a stronger king, okay? All of this could be prevented by a stronger king that was able to abdicate power a little bit better and manage his resources instead of fucking basically ignoring every fucking problem that comes along, which is like really... It's indicative of his whole life going down to these festering sores that he has all over his body. That,
nasty.
Yeah, festering sores are happening all over the kingdom and his body.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, it's kind of also indicative of modern politics. I mean, when they made the decision, when the current king's fucking father died, they decided to make him the fucking king. They chose the lesser of evils because they knew that no one's going to follow the word of a woman, mm-hmm. which, okay, it is what it is. It's fucking way back in the day, ski, and it doesn't happen. So take the brother. Well, there's a precedent there by skipping over the elder son, mm-hmm. and that may or may not have gone over poorly, but it doesn't matter. They didn't choose that route.
Right.
And by not taking that route, they put themselves with somebody that, in the end, maybe the Maesters were trying to set a level of control themselves. Don't know. I'm not really familiar with like the backstory because they're kind of writing it as they go. Mm-hmm. So he's got his hand, which, I mean, dude, if you're the hand and you're not manipulating the crown, then you're not doing your job right. You're right. Just not.
Yeah. Right.
But he tipped his hand too far, as far as the king was concerned. May or may not have been the thing. I mean, you don't. There is no stronger king. So, what do you do? Hope that the current king lives a nice long time till that the male heir gets old enough, and then he decides to redeclare who his actual heir is instead of his daughter, who still is.
Yeah.
Or does he marry her off? Or something else bad. Like, dude, honestly, they could just let her fucking have her way with her guard, but that's unseemly. And it elevates a fucking, not even minor house. So, I mean,
If Viserys was able to deal with these things, though, in a more direct manner, at least confront these things and deal with them before they become fucking problems, he would be such a better king. But right now, I think we're seeing the first signs of him losing his mind. Because he's starting to believe all the suspicions that anyone tells him.
Possibly, but the thing is he sat in grief for too long. His hand didn't make his play soon enough.
True, but I mean, we still don't know what Otto Hightower's real intentions are. And from everything I've seen, look, we have an idea in our head, probably. At least I have an idea in my head, because he is the hand of the king. And, you know, just based on other Game of Thrones watching and stuff, I just suspect he's always up to something. But honestly, you can see him struggling at the moment that he finds out about Rhaenyra and Daemon. He sits there and struggles by himself. What do I do with this information? Okay?
Yeah.
What do I do with this information? He knows what's going to happen. He knows it's not going to go well for him. But he still has to do his job as the hand. And I see him as one of the most honest of all of the people in the court right now. I could be proven totally wrong.
He played it wrong. I think what... I don't know. There isn't enough character development for me to know this for sure, but personally, I think the pro move on his part, honestly, would have been to figure out who knows, who are not those two, and kill them.
Yeah, that would have been the move.
Or, I mean, which would have been the spider, which would have been in, you know, the actual books, you know, normal book series, normal Game of Thrones. That would have been maybe the spider maneuver, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or he goes the Littlefinger route, and he keeps it all hush-hush, and only keeps one witness, but mm-hmm. one solid witness, mm-hmm. and disappears them.
Yeah.
And ever use keeps it in his back pocket. That also might be a spider play as well, but he's not cunning enough for that. So,
I think he's cunning enough. I think he's cunning enough, he's but not.
If he was cunning enough, he would have done it.
I think he's more loyal to Viserys than he is to the crown. If you were more loyal to the crown, you would do what you first said, Adam, and just kill everyone that knows to protect the crown, to protect, like, the, you know, the standing of the name of the House of the Dragon. And that's what you would have done to, you know, and I mean, who's gonna talk after that, you know? And what he decides to do is to be more of, like, I don't know, more of a good friend or something to Viserys by coming to him and saying that he found out, and, like, I don't know. And maybe he was hoping that Viserys would give him the order to do something like that, but he didn't. So, again, it's weakness on Viserys' part no matter what.
Well, it's... I don't think he's surrounded himself with enough strength as part of his weakness, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's a big mess, so... I mean,
He should have hushed it, to be honest. He shouldn't have told him, and he should have hushed it.
Yeah. I mean, what did he think was going to happen by telling him? What good would come of it by telling him?
There was no good.
So, I mean, it either has to be just a shit move as the Hand, and he really should lose his job no matter what. Even if he was just being honest, it was a real shit move by a Hand to do what he did. So, yeah, he deserves...
the right move there.
Like, yeah, by getting rid of him, 100%. He did not protect the crown. He didn't do what he was supposed to do, which sometimes, you know, doesn't turn out great for the Hand, but he didn't take the best course of action by, I think, just because he might actually be a good guy. You know, he might actually be a good guy, and the Hand of the King isn't really a place where you want a super good guy. And maybe loyal, but not a good guy necessarily, you know.
Yeah, because
that guy actually I think was repeated in the regular series because John Arryn, you know, he was a good man.
Yeah. Yeah, and where'd that get him?
Dead.
Right. So, I don't know. What happened between Rhaenyra and Daemon? What are Daemon's intentions? I have no idea. What are his intentions by coming back to the keep? I don't know. I thought he had some greater plan. I think he might be just a little crazy and suicidal and kind of a drifter and doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He may have some greater plan, but I think he
suffers from depression.
I think he 100% suffers from, manic episodes, as we saw in the last episode, and then a huge depression after that huge high of thirding off the crab feeder. I can't even say halving because he thirded him.
Yeah, that was
he
a thirded third,
that
dude.
Motherfucker. And, but yeah, man. So I don't know anybody's intentions at this point. The fucking whole thing is a fucking mess, and now Rhaenyra has to marry the sea snake's son. But I mean, she fucked up though too a lot. Like, everyone is rejecting. It seems like everyone in court right now is rejecting their place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're rejecting their role. You know,
they're trying so hard to maintain the status quo.
Yeah.
That they're doing the exact thing that they don't want to do, which is destabilizing it.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, even down to, like, Allison and stuff, like, you can see her you know, in her displeasure with wanting to have to, like, bed the king, even though she loves him, and the king's in total denial about this these festering wounds that are all over his body, and you got the Meister bringing in a morning after tea.
That was thoughtful of him.
Well, it's from the king.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that was thoughtful.
I mean, it's something. I hate to get into details of this, but I just have a question. Do you really think, like, they went through with the act in the pleasure house? It kind of was just, like, abruptly stopped, and, I mean, did he just, like...
No, I don't think they...
Finger blaster, but...
I don't know.
No, I don't think he did. I think maybe he realized, like, you were mentioning, like, the manic depression, and it's like, what am I doing? Like, I don't want to take you like this. Because, of course, I'm sure they're going to come back to this at some point, but maybe not in a pleasure house, or...
Well,
I don't know. It
was more instinctual, I think.
Or possibly he was setting her up for sabotage.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, it's like, okay, he's already got her down there. He's kind of, like... Just enough, just like the tip of everything.
Just the tip.
Well, and then, you know, she leaves in confusion.
Consider this. Damon knows when he comes back, he bends the knee. He tries to mend things with his brother, who hasn't really accepted him back. He knows his brother's going to have him watch, or at least the hand is smart enough to watch him. So the hand watches him. And he does exactly what he needs to do to stabilize his brother. Exactly what he needs to do. He was last seen with the sea snake, or was allied to the sea snake during that whole fucking crab man do fucking episode. So why wouldn't he use that to leverage his brother's hand and his niece, who's going to be on the throne? Because he could have influenced the kid... who she's going to be betrothed to.
The problem with that, though, Adam, is I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just don't know what Damon wants. I don't know what Damon wants. I have no idea. And that goes for, like, half the people in the show right now. I don't know what Damon wants. I don't know what Rhaenyra really wants. I don't know what Allison wants. I don't know what Otto Hightower wants. I don't know what, like, a lot of people's, like, intentions are, and I'm just sitting there trying to figure it out, and, like, it's very, very fucking confusing what anybody's intentions are.
It's very vague.
Rhaenyra wants to bump uglies with her bodyguard.
Clearly. I mean, clearly. But she also wants
She wants to disrupt the status quo. She wants to be treated like an equal. Like, she's like, I don't know, like any other woman of that time probably would want, you know?
Yeah.
She's in a position of power, but not.
Right, I know.
And her father pointed it out, like, you know, acknowledged what she herself said. If she was a dude,
yeah,
it would matter fucking not one damn bit what the fuck she does. She could father dozens upon dozens of bastards, never acknowledge a single one of them,
yep.
And nobody would bat an eye. Yep. No one.
Yeah.
And, well, unfortunately, that's the status quo. And I don't think she took the lesson from her aunt or whatever, great aunt, who was in contention for the crown. But
right.
Yeah.
I don't think she took to heart the lesson that was being offered to her.
No, she didn't.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, it even says in the episode description for this on IMDb, Rhaenyra learns a valuable lesson. You know? So, I mean...
But she probably should have already learned.
She probably should have, but we all make mistakes at that age.
I don't think she understands the power of a feminine wiles and, you know, the cooch and the royal womb.
And I think that's part of what Damon was trying to actually show her, but in a very irresponsible way. You know,
I don't think that wasn't an irresponsible way. I think what I said is true.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you know of what he wants or not. just because they haven't revealed it in the show. I think that legitimately might have been his ploy.
Yeah.
It makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, politically, it's kind of the pro move for him to make for having no actual power.
Right. No, no assigned, really, like, court power, but I mean...
He's a dragon rider, so he always has power.
He's got power, and, you know, I mean, he's got and a he following.
Have, right, and he has position,
yeah.
even though he's not in line for succession.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd have to be a lot of fucking death. But that's always suspect, and who would really follow him? And we get back to, like, why wasn't he chosen in the first place? Because they know he's not the choice.
Right. Yeah, so anyway, that's the House of the Dragon for this week. I don't want to get into any more of that weirdness, so...
It was a weird episode.
It was a totally Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah.
So, you know what? We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this with our review of Clerks 3. Stay tuned. This episode of Radio Free Galaxy is brought to you by Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst. Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst are the only brand of cheese-filled sausage that will keep you even flowing all day long. Find them in your local supermarket today. Eddie Vedder's Cheddarwurst. Alright, welcome back to the show. Christine, Travis, and Adam here for one more segment. And we are going to be reviewing Clerks 3. We'll stay away from the... There is kind of a big spoiler at the end of this movie. If you are a fan of the View Askew universe, there's a spoiler at the end of this movie. So I guess we'll stay away from that. But for the most part, we're just going to get into it. So... yeah, we won't try to spoil the opportunity to see the movie for you. But we're going to talk quite a bit about it. So, a lot of people won't, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of people won't have seen this by the time you hear this because it just didn't have a wide release. It's not streaming yet anywhere. You can't buy a physical copy. You can't go to the movie theater really and see it, except if you saw it last weekend. It's just, you know, it's a different release thing that Kevin Smith has been doing with his last few movies, and it seems to be working for him. And, you know, the budgets that he works within and the stories that he likes to tell. But it's also hard to just go out and see it if you want to see it and you don't have the opportunity on a certain weekend or a certain night to get tickets. Clerks 3 is the continuing story that was started, back in 1994 when the first Clerks, I believe it was 94. I think they shot it in 93 and released it in 94. And it's the further adventures of our two favorite clerks in the View Askew universe, Randall and Dante, and where they are now in their life, basically. And it's very much another sequel to I enjoyed it. You have to take this movie... for what it is, for the world that it lives in and the story that Kevin Smith is and the actors are trying to tell. And this is just what you're going to get. If you liked Clerks 1, if you like Clerks 2, you'll probably really enjoy Clerks 3. If you're not a fan of Kevin Smith stuff, you're going to hate this. You're like, don't bother. If you're not a fan of, you know, Dogma and Mallrats and Clerks and all of that and Jay and Silent Bob, you're definitely not going to like it. But if you're a fan of all those things, I don't see why you wouldn't love this just as much as the rest of them. It's very much in the same vein. It's got a lot of good humor, quick dialogue, a lot of pop culture references, a lot of crude humor. J-Muse was on fucking fire in this movie. J-Muse showed the fuck up for this movie.
Dude, that guy has so much energy. It is insane.
Dude, he showed up more. Dude, he showed up in the last Jay and Silent Bob movie, and he was really good in that. But I feel like he's, like, hitting, like, his, like, second groove as, like, an actor. And, man, he looks so comfortable in his own skin in this movie. There's different times when he's been going through different things in his life, and you've seen it in movies, and he looks, like, a little uncomfortable in his skin. Mm-hmm. He looks so at peace and, like, just free to be funny and goofy and silly. And he was just nailing, just fucking nailing his lines. And his physical comedy, the dancing and the goofy faces and all that shit. Dude, he was great. And the guy that played...
wasn't it Elias?
Elias.
Dude, I fucking love Elias. He was the best. And his little friend shooting.
Blockchain.
Dude, those guys were fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
What the fuck is this? You got your own little Silent Bob now?
Yeah. I enjoyed this movie very much for what it was. I'm really glad that I got to go see it in the theater with my two best buds. And, yeah, I'm going to shut up for a while and let you guys talk.
There was,
talk.
Like, nobody in that theater, and it was fucking, like, it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it's a Sunday night in Wisconsin when a Packer game is going on, so, you know.
Go to Packers.
That's where everybody is watching them football guys.
The footballs.
Oh, the sports ball. Ah, yeah. Okay.
So, anyway. That was the perfect time for us to see it, so.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I don't give a shit about the Packers or the further adventures of Aaron Rodgers. What'd you think, Adam?
Ah, dude, man, I fucking love that shit. That shit was, it was, I, so, like, of all the Kevin Smith movies, like, I mean, I like the original Clerks. I think, Mallrats is my favorite.
Yeah, me too.
But, like, Clerks, Clerks 2, and Clerks 3, it's like the, I don't know, man, it just feels like let's get back to the main story type movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, right. Okay, yeah, so you watch, like, all the other movies are like a side quest of fucking Silent Bob.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know? Right. I mean, right. That's like, you don't go to see a Deadpool movie not wanting to see Deadpool, you know? You don't.
Right.
When you go see a Kevin Smith movie, you expect to see Kevin Smith as fucking Silent Bob.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, man. Like, I'm glad he's in better health and everything and lost a bunch of weight, but he doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Like, as a more fit, in-shape guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't fill out the coat well enough.
Yeah.
Which is, like, and, like, I'm not saying he should, like, go fucking eat, like, buckets of fucking Crisco or anything, but, like... Yeah. You know, put a fat suit on, man. Because when you can't have Jason Mewes saying, this tubby bitch is my heterosexual life mate, Silent Bob. Like, come on, man. When you can't call him a tubby bitch and make fun of his weight,
yeah.
Like, that was part of their shtick a little bit.
Although, dude, these planes are killing me tonight.
Right. And they're on fire.
Right, normally Monday is a better night than Sunday to
fuck.
Do this shit.
Fuck, dude.
Like, what the fuck? So,
yeah, go ahead, Adam.
And, like... It's hard to not spoil some of it,
yeah.
But, I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know fucking Randall has a heart attack, and that prompts him to fucking... So, like, the meta of the movie within the movie is fucking hilarious. The fact that, like, there are some things I wish they would have gotten back to, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And for a moment, I'm like, I saw Kevin Smith's daughter, and I'm like, why the fuck? Oh, that's right, she's Jason Mewes' kid with fucking... Shannon Elizabeth's character from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, that's why she was there. Like,
Yeah.
I was like, did you have to put your kid in the fucking other movie? Never mind, she's part of the story.
Yeah, they're all part of the story. Yeah.
Well, and that's just it. She's part of the story in the beginning. She actually, like, when they do the flashback sequence, and if I fucking, what was that, in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
Yep.
She, the little... Jason Mewes' character as a little kid, that's his daughter.
Yeah.
That's Harley Quinn.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's very autobiographical. So ever since Kevin Smith had his heart attack, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, I listened to a lot of his podcasts and stuff, and I have heard him tell the story of his heart attack and what went through his mind at the time and everything afterwards. And pretty much word for word, what happens to Randall in this movie is what actually happened to Kevin Smith. So the whole deal, even the doctor's name, Dr. Leitenheim, that's actually the name of Kevin Smith's doctor that saved his life. It's played by Amy Sedaris in this movie.
Great.
Yeah, totally great. She was totally great.
Nailing it, dude.
Yeah, that whole scene on the operating table and stuff with him not wanting to get his crotch shaved and everything, that's all exactly what happened to Kevin Smith. Those are like word for word. He's told the story so many times right now, and I've heard it so many times. All of that stuff actually happened. And then after his heart attack, you know, he decides to get back to... not necessarily just like Randall. Randall decides to do something with his life for the first time. But Kevin in real life... there's another fucking plane coming. Oh my fucking God.
Yeah.
Dude. We must live next to the busiest airport in the fucking world.
Shit.
But it's... you know, Kevin decided to get back to making the movies about his life, like you were talking about, Adam. The main storyline, you know?
Right.
And maybe hit Jay and Silent Bob first, just because, you know, that was just the idea he had. But the Clerks 3 thing really is the main storyline of the View Askew universe. It's the one that started it all, and it is the heart of everything.
Right. And, like, you basically can't have a Kevin Smith movie without, you know, Jay and Silent Bob or the Jersey area.
Right.
Like, it's very hard not to do it.
Yeah.
It at least has to start there.
Yeah. Christine, what did you think of the movie? Sorry.
Oh, no. I loved this movie. But one thing I got to say is I absolutely love the fact that Kevin Smith has brought his friends for the last 28 years throughout his, like, entire filmography. Like, and to see, like, this movie. I mean, I was introduced with Kevin Smith from Dogma. And, like, it kind of makes sense because I kind of had a crush on Jason Mewes back in the day. Because I was like, oh, my God, he's so trashy.
It's so much.
It does, doesn't it? But, like, I watched Clerks after that, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then, like, I've watched almost all of Kevin Smith's movies. But, yeah, he did kind of go astray. But this movie, I think, brought it together, and there was a whole lot of really good laughs in this. I was actually surprised that he was able to, like, bring it back to, you know, the roots of where he originally started. You know, he kept it true.
They shot it in the original... Quick Mart where he actually worked, that's, you know,
where
still
the
original
there. Movie was originally shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they shot it there. They had 2 weeks when they just, I guess, just rented out the store from the owners. And they just, you know, like, mocked it up and just used it as a shooting site and just... Go ahead, Christine.
Oh my God, I was going to say the mock-ups in the convenience store were fucking awesome if you actually looked at them. They had Cherries, which were from Canada.
Yeah.
But like all the movie cast stuff.
I think the, like all that stuff, like if you notice, most of that shit was related to Canada. I think that was a nod to Lionsgate.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just thought that was really cool because I'm like, he's made an entire universe where he has brands within his brand. And there goes another one. Motherfucker.
Slightly smaller plane.
Yeah. Yeah, you can hear that, huh?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it, all of that's cool. And let's not be remiss to not mention that there are some very, very touching moments.
Oh, very.
Especially if you've been following these characters for as long as we all have, there's some very touching moments in this movie. Dealing with their relationship between each other and dealing with their own, their each own their loss and their questioning of faith and, you know, believing in themselves and each other. And I mean, it's a small movie with very huge interpersonal things that happen in it.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is like kind of the best of what Kevin Smith does. You know, he can branch out and do some Masters of the Universe stuff and right. to varying degrees of success and, you know, this and that. But this is the best of what Kevin Smith does. And that's right. what this is what we love him for.
Yeah.
He takes a small story and makes it bigger than what it really is.
Right. And yeah.
But still keeps it a small story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's way more relatable than, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, man. Like, I'd go apeshit if somebody killed my fucking little puppy dog, too, after they broke into my house, fucked with my car, and all that shit. But, like, you can't fully relate to a John Wick movie. I mean, you can understand the sentiment, but you can't relate to it. This you can.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely can. If you're like Randall, you've probably got a friend like Dante. If you're Dante, you probably got a friend like Randall. There's probably some asshole that's very similar to Elias in your life somewhere. Right. That guy was amazing.
Oh, dude, that guy was so good.
All of his outfits were so good.
Oh, they just progressed. Like, you know, he would get, like, worse for a while, then he'd get better. And, like, everything about it, like, without saying a single word, was fucking fantastic.
And Rosario Dawson, thank you for showing up
so beautiful.
In this movie. She added just that little touch of feminine, like, just mwah, to the movie that it just absolutely needed. And man, it was good. And then you get all the little, like, Kevin Smith universe cameos. There's, like, Ming Chen, and there's Brian Johnson, and there's Brian Quinn, and there's a bunch of the Impractical Jokers.
Yeah, I was going to say there was
Ben
a lot of
Affleck, them. There's Ben Affleck. Fred Armisen just shows yeah. up. Yeah, Amy Sedaris, like we said. But there's just so many cameos because he just likes to do things and have
movies.
His friends involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're going to get a bunch of extras to play hockey on the roof of the Quick Stop, well, why not make it all of your friends? You know what I mean? And
yeah.
you could see Walt was in there. I mean, all the comic book guys were in there. Everybody was there. And I just love that about Kevin. And he is so absolutely loyal to his friends and loved ones that, like, even where there could be a better choice for a better actor in a situation, he goes with what he wants to do and what he thinks is better for his movie and not necessarily the profits of the movie. And he does it, makes that decision, suffers the consequences. And that's why we just all love him for
yeah.
that. Right?
Right.
Agreed.
And yeah,
I think because he does, like, the job of that he, like, his approach to it, like, that's how he gets, like, what's her fucking face, who used to be on 90210, who played Brenda. But
Shannon Doherty.
Yeah, so Shannon Doherty was in Mallrats, and then when Jay and Silent Strike Back, literally gets fucking Wes Craven and her for a fucking, like, 8-second scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rad.
Chris Rock, I mean, just like.
Right.
Yeah.
And like getting Ethan Suplee back in there to fucking talk about the schooner.
Yeah.
Who, again, like another actor that, like, dude, he looks really good fucking, like, getting healthy, man.
But I just don't recognize him.
right. Like, you still recognize, you know, Kevin Smith because you can't, like, he's still got the goatee. It's that. His facial expressions and those eyes.
And he still wears the uniform.
He always wears the hat.
The whole uniform.
The whole uniform.
The whole Kevin Smith uniform.
Kevin Smith's
the jorts, the slip-ons, the hat, the whole
and the hockey.
Yeah.
Hockey jersey.
Hockey-style shirt, yeah.
Yeah.
Obnoxiously huge.
Hockey sweater.
Whatever.
It's called a sweater.
Oh, I'm so... They're
actually that size, Christine, so you can wear pads in them. They're not purposely, like, oversized.
Yeah.
Sports.
So anybody got anything else to add? There's a huge spoiler that happens at the end. I don't want to get into it. I don't think it's necessary to talk about
Honestly, if you can get a chance to see it, I say see it because you have to actually be there, maybe have a few of your good friends and just experience it because that's one thing that Kevin Smith always has.
Dumb ass down
all
the way to the end of the fucking credits.
We saw it as a Fathom event last night, so they had a making of
right.
real
it's a shit
at the end.
It's a shit on the Blu-ray that usually that's either on a bonus disc.
Yeah.
or like if there's only one disc in there, it's yeah. like the bonus content that most people don't even fuck with.
Yeah.
Which honestly, you should usually go check it out anyway.
Yeah.
Like they took the time to give it to you, check yep. it out. But like, I don't mind sitting through the entirety of credits. You know, like yeah. every last person who fucking was involved in that movie put something into it. Like. Sure. A little bit like, you know, respect and, the process.
And you know that staying through the credits in a Kevin Smith movie is going to be less right. of an investment than sitting through the credits of a Star Wars movie. You right. know, you're going to be there for fucking 20 oh, minutes at a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, there's you know? No explodies right, or... Like,
well, but the thing is, with the sitting through 20 minutes of credits of a Star Wars movie, I'm still hearing Star Wars music, which makes me happy.
Yep, 100%. Yeah,
and like sitting through the credits for a Kevin Smith movie, there's going to probably be a payoff, and I'm usually going to enjoy most of the music, even if it's not music that I normally like. Like, there was a lot of fucking, like, pop punk in this fucking soundtrack, and I was like, meh.
It's very much on brand for him, though. You know, right. like, yeah. it's very much on brand. Sometimes, I'm not the biggest My Chemical Romance fan. Okay, I'm not a fan at all. But let's be completely honest.
But I mean, honestly, most of his soundtracks are fucking really good. Like they're yeah. appropriate. They're really right. well thoughtfully selected. It isn't just like, hey, who can we get? Like yeah. I'm not gonna fucking hire Sting or fucking to do my, I don't know, my fucking dramatic romance fucking movie right. soundtrack. You know, because I think he can do a good job. I'm not gonna hire Phil Collins because yeah. it's fucking Phil Collins. I'm not right. gonna. Get Tangerine Dream because they got really good synthesizers and I want to like fucking extenuate my fucking dystopian fucking world movie
No. It's New Jersey, you're telling a New Jersey story and right. so you're gonna but the way they used the Black Parade in the beginning of this movie right. I do like that song. I'm not a fan of My Chemical Romance, but I do really like that song, and the way they used it in the beginning of this movie as an intro was really, really good. And I really liked that opening scene. It was really cool. I mean,
a little bit, like, I think it would have been funny if they would have just did a little bit more musical nod to her fucking The Garden State.
Yeah.
But that's my predilections, but...
Yeah, yeah but I mean, would Bruce Springsteen really fit in here?
I was more thinking Coheed and Cambria.
Oh, okay. Well, that just shows you, where mine goes, so...
Right. I mean, or you could have Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
I would have been okay with that.
Anyway, that was Clerks 3. We liked it. It was good. I think
can
you
can
should
I spoil something for everybody.
Yeah, please do.
Don't expect to see Olaf.
Disappointed.
Yeah. Deeply disappointed by no Olaf.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to see his metal face.
Yeah. But everything else, don't worry. It's gonna be there.
Oh, dude, hold on.
What?
I should have paid attention during the credits. I was wondering if they used any more Love Among Freaks fucking songs.
Because that was
in the original Clerks soundtrack heavily.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or if they're even still around for that matter, I guess. I don't know, reunion tour.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, it's a quality movie, man. He's not just right. especially if you don't follow a lot of his podcasts. And you don't know the story of his heart attack as well as maybe I do. Definitely see this movie because it's good. It's really touching.
Yeah.
He really wrote the shit out of this movie. He did a really good job. A lot of times when writers do something autobiographical like this and get into maybe the final chapter, it can be a little forced. And
heavy-handed,
heavy-handed, forced, and just relying on the nostalgia of the past, and this really creates new mythology in the Viewaskew universe, while still paying homage to what has come before, and that's shown mostly with like the Rosario Dawson stuff. You know what
right.
I mean? So Good job, Kevin Smith. I can be critical when you do something stinky like that Masters of the Universe mess. But this, when you get back in your wheelhouse and you do your thing,
he did the shit out of it.
He fucking wrote the shit out of this movie. He directed the shit out of it, and everyone else that worked on it did a fucking fantastic job. I had fun at the movie theater, which is all I ask for when, you know, I have to drop $15 to get in to see a movie. Just let me have a fun time. And
yeah.
I had fun. I had a great night out with my friends. So, see Clerks 3. I think you'll like it, just like
we did.
Anyway, this has been episode 119 of Radio Free Galaxy. Thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate it. Check us out on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, and, you know, that's enough. And YouTube, you know, don't worry about Twitter or any of that because I don't use it anymore. And I don't plan on starting anytime soon. So,
right.
Yeah.
You're old and curmudgeonly.
I'm old and curmudgeonly, and I don't give a fuck about your 256 characters or whatever it is.
Ooh.
Now.
Right. And to quote my buddy Steve Shields, you fucking boomer.
Yeah, you fucking boomer. Whatever. Boomer. All right. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Radio Free Galaxy.
Bye.